Okay, we're recording. Go ahead.
Okay, good morning, everybody. The weekly shiur from Masechet Chagiga is sponsored by Yitz Weiss, CPA, who always strives to make the result of your tax filings a good reason for Chagiga, and Refuah Shleima for Binyamin Simcha Ben Adina Minyan.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're doing Chagiga Daf Chaf Beis, which is all about Tumah and Tahara. So get ready. It's going to be a little bit of a journey, but I don't think it's that difficult. You should be able to handle it. We can handle anything. So here we are. We're picking up from a discussion about the Mishnah. The Mishnah at the very beginning of the third parak talked about a number of instances in which we're more machmir for kudshim than truma, specifically with respect to tumah and tahara. And we're talking now still about the first instance, and that is this Gezeirah D'Rabbanan that says that when you immerse vessels in a mikveh in order to make them tahor, in order to purify them, you can't immerse a small vessel within a large vessel. You have to immerse each vessel separately, and that's true when it comes to kudshim, but not true when it comes to truma. In other words, if you want to use a vessel for truma, you have to use it in a tahor fashion, in a way that's pure. And the same is true by using vessels for kudshim. But there's a difference in the level of tahara that you need to attain for kudshim. And one of the differences is this one. In order to use it for kudshim, you have to make sure that you immerse each vessel separately. Whereas when it comes to truma, we don't mind. You could put two vessels, one within another, and then immerse them, and that's not a problem. And the reason for this takana, we started to explore on the last daf, and we encountered the shita of Rav Ila. And Rav Ila explained that the reason why we don't want people immersing vessels within one another, doubled up, is because of kfeido shel kli chotzeitz. We're concerned that the inner vessel is going to be heavy enough that it's just going to sink to the outer vessel. And when you immerse the two of them together, you're not going to separate them, and they're going to remain together. And there's going to be a chatzitza. The water of the mikveh is not going to immerse the entire vessel. There's going to be a chatzitza because the two of them are touching each other. And so therefore, when it comes to kudshim, we require you to separate the two vessels and immerse them separately. Now, the assumption here is that that's only true on a daraisa, drabanan level, but on a daraisa level, we're not so concerned about this chatzitza because I think that they're both wet enough that the water is going to seep in between, and that's not really a concern on a daraisa level. But at least on a drabanan level, we're concerned about that chatzitza according to Rav Ila. At the very end of last week's daf, we encountered the sheet of Rava. Rava said, that's not why we don't allow you to immerse these two vessels together. Rather, the reason is lav mishum chatzitza, not because of chatzitza, but rather, if you look three lines from the bottom on daf chaf aleph amid beis, rather the reason is gezeira shel yatpil machtin vitzinoros bekli she'ein b'fiv kishvoferes hanod. We're concerned that if you immerse vessels together, meaning one vessel inside a smaller vessel inside a larger vessel, then you're going to, if you think that's permissible, you might end up immersing a very small vessel, such as a pin or a needle, within a kli, within a vessel, another vessel. Hold on, I have to admit it twice. Okay, within another vessel that is that's opening is not big enough for us to consider the water within that vessel as mechubar to the mikveh. In other words, if you could picture for a moment a tea kettle that just has the small opening but not the large opening, right? Our tea kettles have a very large opening in the top and then a small opening that's a spout that you pour out of. So picture a vessel that's just a tea kettle with just a spout, and the spout is very narrow, right? Let's say the spout is as narrow as a drinking straw, and it has no other opening to the vessel. So if I now want to immerse a small pin, I might, in order to make things easier and not to lose the pins in the mikveh, I might slide those pins into that tea kettle with a very small spout, and then just immerse that entire spout in the mikveh, and wait for it to all bubble out so I know that the inside of that tea kettle is filled with water. And I'll consider that as if I've immersed those pins properly in a mikveh. But the problem is that it's not going to work. It's not going to work even on a daraisa level. Because in order for the water that seeps into the tea kettle to be considered part of the mikveh water itself and to be mechuber to the larger mikveh water, the opening of that tea kettle needs to be much wider than just the width of a drinking straw. In fact, the width that's required is kishvoferes hanod, which is, we'll see in a moment, which the Chachamim estimated is the same width as if you insert two fingers and have room to maneuver them around. So you clearly can't do that with a drinking straw. And so in our example, had you put those pins into that tea kettle with a spout that's only as wide as a drinking straw and immersed that whole thing into the mikveh, that wouldn't work because the water that seeps into the tea kettle is not considered connected to the larger mikveh water because that drinking straw with spout is much smaller than the width of a spout that would require me, that would allow me to move two fingers together. And so Rava says, the reason why, when it comes to Kudshim, we don't allow you to immerse one vessel within another is because we're afraid that if you immerse one vessel within another, you might come to immerse small pins in a tea kettle that has a very small and narrow spout. Hopefully that was clear. That's basically the basis for the rest of the daf. That's the gezeira we're talking about. So let's read it inside. Again, says Rava, Gezeira, again, starting three lines from the bottom on Chaf Aleph and Beis, Gezeira shelo yatbil machtin v'tzinores. It's a Gezeira, lest you come to toivel pins and needles, b'kli shein piv kishvofer zanod, in a kli whose opening, whose spout, is narrower than a shvofer zanod. And where do we see that halacha play out? In a slightly different context, kidetnan, as we have a Mishnah that teaches us, a Mishnah Mikvos, that tells you how to build a mikveh. So when you build a mikveh, very often you want to the requirement of mikveh water is that it can't be mayim she'uvim. It can't be water that's collected in a kli that's artificially moved from one place to another. It can't be water that's collected in a kli. It's got to be rainwater or something similar that just naturally flowed into that area. And so sometimes it's hard to get that amount of rainwater. This is true for our modern day mikvahs. It's hard to collect that that large amount of rainwater if you want to build a big mikvah that people can dip into. So you want a big pool of water. We don't always have that much rainwater. So what we do is we have a kosher mikvah filled exclusively with rainwater that hasn't been collected in a kli, so that it's a very kosher mikveh. And then that is attached to a larger pit that will actually use as the mikveh. And then we do what's called hashaka. We have a tube, a canal that connects the smaller pit of very kosher mikveh water to the larger pit of water that would not necessarily be kosher mikveh water. And because there is hashaka, they're touching each other, it's as if the two pits are connected. However, that canal or that connection has to be wider than a shvoferes hanod. That's the same width we just described. So this Mishnah that we're recording from Mikvos is explaining that halacha. Kidetnan, Eruv Mikvos, when you're attaching two pits of water and you want them both to be considered kosher, kishvoferes hanod. The connection between them, the canal, has to be at least as width as a shvoferes hanod, ke'uveha ukichalala, not just the inner width of the shvoferes hanod, but also the outer, meaning the full circumference of the shvoferes hanod. A shvoferes hanod is some kind of opening that's used for some kind of skin bottle that they used to, it sounds like a pouch, like a canteen pouch that they used to make out of leather. And this is kind of the drinking straw part of that. So it's got to be as wide as the full circumference of that shvoferes hanod. And Chazal knew that we would have a hard time understanding how big that was. So they said, kishtei etzpos chozros lumekoman. And the width of that can be estimated by two finger widths chozros l'makomen, where you have room to wiggle them around. So if you kind of picture, if you put two fingers together and you kind of figure out the full circumference of that diameter, that'll give you a sense of how big a opening we're talking about. And so this Mishnah that we just quoted is talking about that in terms of Eruv Mikvos, what the width is necessary in order to create Hashaka properly, in order to connect the two pits. But we're now applying that halacha as well to this idea that, again, if you dip pins or any small thing within a vessel, on a Daraisa level, the vessel's opening has to be as big as a Shvoferis Hanod, right? About that big for the people who can see me. About that big. And if not, then it's not considered a mikvah. It's as if you haven't properly immersed those pins and needles. And because of that concern, we make a gzera that we're not going to allow, when it comes to Kodesh, when it comes to immersing Kudshim, we're not going to allow you to immerse any vessel within a vessel. You have to immerse each vessel separately. That's true by Kudshim. Keep in mind that we're going to explore this, but it's not true by Truma. Truma has a lower level of requirements of Tefillah. Okay. That's the gzera that the Mishnah said. And then we just kind of, in the next four or five lines, mention a side point. This shita of Rava, Savar La Kadamar of Nachman or Rabba Baravua, that Yud Aleph Malos Shanu Kan, that our Mishnah contains 11 separate halachos, 11 separate distinctions between Truma and Kodesh. Shesh Rishonos Bein LaKodesh Bein LaChulin Shenas LaTaras HaKodesh. The first six apply not only for Kudshim itself, but also for individuals who eat their Chulin and accept it upon themselves the stringencies of eating their Chulin as if it's Kudshim. That's the first six. And then Achronos, the last five, LaKodesh, that apply only for Kudshim proper, but it doesn't apply to people who accepted to eat their chulin at the level of kudshim in terms of tuma and tara. And the point here is that Rava apparently is consistent with this opinion of Rabba Bar Avuha, who said that there are 11 halachos separately, whereas in the case of Rav Ila back on the last Amud, in the last Daf, two of the cases, I think, reflected the same chumrah, so you kind of group them together, and therefore there are only really 10 levels, and Rava is consistent with this member who says there are 11 levels. Okay, 11 levels. Okay. The Gemara now continues and says, Ma'ika bein derava l'derav ila. What's the difference, practically, between Rava and Rav Ila? Both of them are explaining reasons for the takana in the Mishnah of not immersing one vessel within another. But who cares? What's the difference, practically speaking, between the two opinions? Is there any nafkamina lalacha between the two? The Gemara answers immediately, Ika benayu. There is a difference between the two, and that is sal v'gagortani shemilan kelam v'tbilan. The difference is a basket, a woven basket, and a gorgortani, which Rashi explains is a larger, similar woven basket. Rashi explains that this, they use that as a kind of sieve, as part of the winemaking process. But in either case, we're talking about a woven basket. And in those cases, because they're large and they clearly don't have a very small opening, but they have a very big opening, just because of the way they're constructed. So the Gemara says, L'man diomre mishum chatzitza ika. According to Rav Ila, who said that the problem was a chatzitza problem, with the two vessels touching each other, there the halacha should apply, or the gezer should apply, to this situation as well. L'man diomre mishum gezeira shemer yatpil machtem vitsinorios beklishein piv bishkeshvaferes anod. However, according to Rava, who said that the whole reason here was a gezeira because we're afraid that you're going to immerse needles in a vessel whose opening is too small. So then, salva gugurtani shein b'fiam kishvaferes hanod leka. So then, these baskets, which are very large, so they should not be included in this gezeira. And in fact, according to Rava, you're allowed to immerse vessels within one another if they're this type of vessel, a large and open salve gagartani, a woven basket. Okay. And then consistent with that, we said, v'azda Rava l'taymeh, and Rava is consistent with his own shita that we learned separately, Dama Rava, we have a separate member of Rava that we know, salve gagartani, shemilan kelim v'itpilan tohorin, that if you take a basket like this, a small basket, a large basket, you fill them with kelim, and then you lower them into the mikvah, so then that's okay. And Rashi points out that it's okay even for kachim. We're not talking about truma here, we're talking about even kachim. And so it's clear that Rava is consistent with what we just said. This member of Rava is consistent with what we just said, that according to Rava, the Mishnah's gezerah, not disallowing you from immersing one vessel within another, doesn't apply to a salve gagurtani, doesn't apply to a basket like this. And then he adds the following. This is still quoting from Rava's Memra. Umikva shecholku b'sal v'gagortani. Let's say you have a mikvah that's 40 sa, right? The minimum dimensions of a mikvah is 40 sa, so you have just enough there. And now you lower a divider in between it, and it's made out of the same woven material. Now, the woven material is tight enough that the holes that are naturally there in the woven material are smaller than a shvoferes hanod. And so therefore, if you lower that into the mikvah, you've now divided that mikvah into two separate mikvos that are not big enough on their own. As we know, if it was bigger than a shvoferes hanod, bigger than two fingers that you could move around the holes, so then the water would be considered hashaka and they would touch each other and it would be considered one large mikvah. But here, where there's this woven material, the holes in it are smaller than a shvoferes hanod, it actually acts as a mechitza, it breaks it into two separate mikvos, and therefore, mikvah shechalku b'sal v'gagartani, hatovel sham lo also lo tefila. The person who immerses in there is not considered as to have immersed properly because this mikvah is too small. It's not considered a 40 saw mikvah. And how do we know, in fact, that a divider like this, that has very small holes, smaller than a shvoferes hanod, actually divides the mikvah and makes it puzzle? We know that from the fact that the following, da'ara kula chalchulei mechalchala'a uva'in adika memsa b'makom echad. He says it's similar to the situation of a kind of a naturally forming mikvah where the spring water, water from underground, from an underground spring or from a river nearby, kind of seeps through the ground and comes on from the bottom into that pit. And yet we know that the pit needs to be 40 sa on its own. And if it was true that you could kind of could connect that pit with the original water source, with the river, let's say, that's nearby, that's whose water is now seeping underground and filling that pit from underneath, if you could connect it through those minuscule little holes in the ground, so then you wouldn't need 40 saw in this pit itself. It would be connected to the water source, and it would be a kosher mikvah. And yet we don't say that. We say that this pit itself has to be 40 saw, indicating that the mere fact that it's connected through little holes to another water source is not sufficient, and unless those holes are as big as a shvoferes hanod, it won't be considered connected, it will be considered severed from that water source, it needs its own 40 saw, and so the same thing is true with this mikvah, where you lower that wicker material down, and you don't have holes bigger than a shvoferes hanod, it divides the mikvah into two, each one is less than 40 saw, and it's not a kosher mikvah. Okay, that's the end of that memra of Rava. And then we say the following, Vahani Mili, okay, and this halacha that we've been talking about, this idea that if you immerse items within within another vessel, right, Vahani Mili Bikli Tahor, that's only true when it comes to a Kli, where the outer Kli, the larger outer Kli, is itself pure, is itself tahor, and therefore it doesn't need an immersion. You're only using it as a vessel to conveniently collect other vessels within it and dip them into the mikvah. Aval b'kli tameh, but if that Kli itself is tameh, and requires immersion in its own right in order to become tahor, so then migu de salka tfilo lukule gufe de mana salka lunami okelum de ispe. So then, once since the outer kli is getting the benefit of the mikvah, so since the outer kli is getting the benefit of the mikvah, you're using it in order to purify that outer kli. So then we don't have a problem with putting kelim in the inner kli. So then you can lower that item, have the other kelim within that item, within that kli, and the kelim within that kli will become tahor. How do we see that? We know that from a Mishnah, Ditnan. And this is a Mishnah with respect to Truma, first of all. It says, Ditnan, kelim shemilan kelim. Let's say you have a kli that you fill with other kelim, vit bilan, and you immerse that kli, hare elu tahorim. It works. It works to make those kelim tahorim, because again, we're talking here about Truma in this Mishnah, not about kadshim. And then it goes on to say, Vimlo tavol, but if you didn't immerse it, mayim hamu ravim, vimlo tavol mayim hamu ravim, achyu muravim kishvoferes hanod. However, if you didn't, this is a cryptic sentence here. The Gemara is about to explain it, but if you didn't immerse the water that's mixed in, whatever that means, we'll see it in a moment. So then, achyu muravim kishvoferes hanod. Then it doesn't work unless the opening, as we've been saying, is as big as a shvoferes hanod. Right? We're now talking again on a daraisa level for kadshim, or again for truma here, we're talking even on a drabana level, because the gezeira that we were talking about before that said you can't do this for any kelim at all, no matter how big the opening is, right? That was the gezeira. That was by kadshim alone. This mission is talking about truma. So by truma, we're saying that we're only going to disqualify it on a daraisa level, right? But the mission here is saying that if the opening of that vessel, again, we're talking about like a kettle kind of thing where there's a spout. If the opening of that spout was less than a shvoferes hanod, so then it's not going to work to immerse the or to purify the vessels inside. However, if it's as big as a shvoferes hanod, if it's big enough, then it will work to immerse the vessels inside. So the Gemara says, "My kamar, what does this mean? Im lo tavo mayim umravim." My kamar, vim lo tavo. My kamar, vim lo tavo. What does it mean? Hachi kamar. Vim eno tsarich lat bilo, umayim hamuravin, achyu muravin kishvoferes hanod. So what it meant to say is, if you don't need to immerse that vessel itself, meaning that vessel itself, that outer vessel that you're using to collect these smaller vessels in order to immerse them, if that outer vessel itself didn't need immersion in its own right, because it was already tahor, you're only using it as a convenient way to collect all these small kelim inside. So then we're going to say that the minimum requirement of the opening is a shvoferes hanod. However, if it itself is undergoing immersion because it itself became tamei, so then this whole issue of shvoferes hanod goes away, and the fact that the mikvah is working. The theory here is as follows: when you immerse a vessel in the mikvah, you're not only immersing and you're not only purifying the outside of the vessel, but you're also purifying the inside of the vessel, right? So clearly, on some level, even if it's a very small opening, less than a shvoferes hanod, even if it's a very small opening, your immersion of that vessel in the mikvah and allowing it to fill with mikvah water is working to purify the inside of that vessel, right? And so clearly, no matter how big the opening is, we're considering that water that fills the inner chamber of that vessel as mechubar, as connected to the mikvah water, and working as mikvah water. And so that's true where you're actually immersing that vessel in order to create tahara for the outside of the vessel and the inside of the vessel, where that vessel itself was tamei, and now you're hoping to make it tahor when you immerse it in the mikvah. And so in that situation, we're going to allow you to put those small pins in there, no matter how big the opening is, and it'll work because the mayim is considered mechubar to the outside water. As opposed to a situation where you're only using that vessel in order to conveniently collect the smaller vessels and to use it as a kind of a boat to lower them in, or a submarine to lower them in and make sure that they stay within your control. So in that situation where that kli itself doesn't require tahara, we're not going to consider the inside of the water that gathers inside as mechuber to the water outside. And so therefore, again, what we're saying here in this point particularly is that only a vessel that itself doesn't need tahara, do we say that this shofaras anor needs to be that wide in order to make the items inside taller. Okay, next point in the Gemara. V'hadu rava udrav ila tanoihi. Now we're going to suggest that this machlokas between Rava and Rav Ila as to the reason for the takana in our Mishnah, again, where Rav Ila said it was an issue of chatzitza, and Rava says it's an issue of gzeiratu shvoferes hanod, so it's a machlokas tanoim. It's a machlokas tanoim. Or reflects, or it's parallel to the name machlokas tanoim. Ditanya, we have a braisa that says, sal v'gargur tani, a basket and a large basket, shemilan kalim vitbilan, where you filled them with vessels and lowered it into the mikvah to make them tahar, bein lekodesh, bein letruma tahorin. So whether it's talking about kodesh and whether it's talking about truma, says the Tanakama, it's tahar, it works, right? So that's consistent with Rava's shita, but not with Rav Igla's shita, right? Because Rava, if you remember above, we said that since Rava said that the whole problem, is a gezera atu, a vessel with a very small opening, when it came to a sal or gagortani, where that's not an issue, where it's always a very open thing, so the gezera is not going to apply, and therefore the tefillah works. That's Tanakhama is consistent with Rava. Avashol Omer, Avashol the Tana says, with Truma Avalo Kodesh, it works Avalo Kodesh. It works for Truma, but not for Kodesh, because he's going to hold like Rav Ila that our Gezer Drabanan articulated in our Mishnah applies also to a Sal and a Gargur Tani. It doesn't matter how big the opening is, because the size of the opening wasn't the issue. The issue was a potential Chatzitza problem that's going to exist by the Sal and Gargur Tani as well. Okay, the Gemara then says, "Ihachi, if this is all true," and the Gemara, I think Rashi or the Rishonim clarify that this question now applies whether or not you say the issue is one of Shofar Sanod or Chatzitza. It applies whether both to Rav Ila and Rava. So if this is true that you want to make a gezera, disallowing immersing one vessel within another, why does it only apply to Kodesh? Why doesn't it apply to Truma also? So, Ihachi, Truma Nami, it should apply to Truma also. So, the Gemara says, Luman Kamrinan, Chaverim. We're addressing this takana to people who know halacha, to Chaverim, people who understand how halacha works, and who are going to know what the halacha, and are going to practice the halacha properly. Chaverim, Meideyadi. And when it comes to Truma, the people who know the halacha know the halacha. You don't have to worry about a gezera of chatzitza. You don't have to worry about a gezera of shoferes hanod. They're going to know that you can't have a chatzitza. They're going to make sure to move the kli around within the kli, or they're going to make sure that the kli, the outer kli, has a big enough opening, and it's not a problem. Gemara says, "Yachi kodesh nami." What do you mean, made the other? If that's true, then that should be true by kachim as well. They know what the halacha is, and you shouldn't have to make the gezera. The Gemara says, "Chazi le'am aretz v'azo matbil." We're concerned that an am aretz might see a chaver immersing a kli within a kli. He then is going to immerse kelim on his own, and he's going to make the mistake of either chatzitza or shofar zanot. The Gemara then says, "Trumanami chazi le'am aretz v'azo matbil." Why is your concern limited to kachim? Why shouldn't it be truma as well? So the Gemara answers, "Lo makbilinan minayu." When it comes to truma, the Kohanim know not to accept truma from an Amaretz. They know that an Amaretz is that unless they're watching him being mafresh truma right there, and that it wasn't in his own control, and they know that the Amaretz didn't toivel kelim on his own, and then put truma in those kelim and potentially make them a problem, the Kohen will be careful not to accept that from an Amaretz. The Gemara says, Kodesh Nami lo nakpil minayu. If that's true, so then when it comes to Kudshim also, we shouldn't accept Kudshim from an Amaretz, and therefore you don't have to be worried about this whole Tevila problem because we don't accept Kudshim from an Amaretz. Gemara's answer is Hav Yila Iva. If we don't accept Kudshim from an Amaretz, then they're going to be insulted, and it's going to lead to bad things, as we'll see. Gemara says, Trumanami Hav Yila Iva. If you don't accept Truma from an Amaretz, they'll be insulted. So the Gemara answers, "Well, ichpas le dazul yahiv le kohen am aretz chavre." We're not concerned if a am aretz is insulted by a kohen who knows what he's doing, not accepting truma from him, because he won't be that insulted. He knows that there are other kohanim, and he'll just become friends with a kohen who's not as careful about things, and he'll give it to him. Whereas when we're dealing with kudshim, presumably all the people dealing with kudshim are people who know what they're doing and who are experts, and therefore the Amaretz is not going to find anyone else to give his kachim to, and it'll be a problem. Where it says, Uman Tana Dechayish Leiva, who's the Tana who holds of this idea of Eva, that we care about what someone thinks about is going to be insulted if we don't accept his trumar kachim? Rabbi Yossi, it's Rabbi Yossi, Detanya, I'm Rabbi Yossi. Rviosi is the one who says that the reason why we accept wine and oil produced by an Amaretz, who's not going to know necessarily how to make sure that it's tahor all the time, and there might be a small chashash that he's going to be metame this wine or shemen or oil, yet we accept that for purposes of kudshim, for doing nesachim, for example, as Rashi points out. So we accept it from him because we're afraid that if we were to insult the wine producers and oil producers who are amei aretz and don't know the halacha, they're going to end up going and building their own beis hamikdash. They're going to build their own bama, and that's impermissible. They're going to end up burning their own paraduma. That's impermissible. And so to keep them within the fold and to make sure they're not insulted, we accept their we relax the standards a little bit, and we kind of trust them that they're not going to be mitame these things. Amar Rav Papa Kaman Mikabwina Haidna Sadusa. Similarly, Rav Papa said, "Who is the one that holds this idea that we accept testimony from an Amma Aretz? Kaman Rabbi Yossi. This is consistent with the Shita of Rabbi Yossi that if we insult an Amma Aretz, they're going to set up their own judicial system, and they're going to be insulted by our not accepting their testimony, and therefore we accept their testimony." Okay, good. That's the end of that discussion. And now the Gemara asks a simple question, two-word question. V'neichlush l'sheila. Even if this is true, that we don't have to make this gezeira for truma because of the reason we just said that we're not going to take truma from an Amma Aretz. But why aren't we concerned that the Amma Aretz will improperly immerse his vessel, either create a chatzitza according to Rav Iwa, or immerse it within a vessel that doesn't have a big enough opening of a shofaris anot according to Rava, and then he's going to lend us his vessels, and then we're going to use it, right? So why aren't we concerned to that? Maybe we should be worried about that. And therefore, maybe we should apply our gezeira to truma as well, because we're concerned that the Amma Aretz is going to improperly immerse his vessels for purposes of truma. Then we're going to borrow his vessel for truma. Now, the next 26 lines of the Gemara are, well, we'll go through them, but the next 26 lines of the Gemara, just so you kind of have this organized, is a kind of side discussion that proves that there's such a thing as borrowing kelim from Amei Aretz. Talmidei Chachamim do borrow kelim from Amei Aretz, and that's why this is a real concern. We should be concerned that the Amei Aretz is going to improperly immerse his vessel. The the chaver, the person who knows what he's doing, is going to borrow kelim from that Am Haaretz, and that's going to lead to bad things because it wasn't properly immersed. So let's do the next 26 lines on that. Let me just check on my time. 9:42. Okay, here we go. 26 lines to prove this idea that we do in fact borrow things from Am Haaretz. Ditanan, we have a mission that says, Kli cheres matzil ala kol. Okay, so for this halacha, we need to do a slight introduction, and that is, we know that if a dead body is in a building, all the things within that building become tamei because of Tumas Ohel. Tumas Ohel says that anything within the Ohel, within that building, becomes tamei. If you have a dead body on the first floor, and you have items like vessels and food and people on the second floor, and there's a trap door, a hole that connects the first floor to the second floor, the Tumah will travel up through that hole, through that trap door, and everything on the second floor will become tamei. Now, if you have a kli cheres, the halacha of a kli cheres is that a kli cheres, unlike a metal vessel, kli cheres is earthenware, so unlike a metal vessel, a kli cheres, only the outside of the kli cheres becomes tamei, but not the inside of the kli cheres, if it comes into contact with a dead person. So let's say, for example, you have a kli cheres that's in a building, and it's sealed, items within that kli cheres, because only the outside becomes tamei, not the inside, so then items within that sealed kli cheres, if the kli cheres shares a building, is within the same ohel, same building as a dead body, items within that kli cheres will not become tamei, because of this halacha, that only the outside of a kli cheres becomes tamei, but not the inside. So the food inside the kli cheres will remain tahor. Not only that, but if you have that kli cheres, and you plug that trap door with a kli cheres so that the kli cheres covers the circumference of that trap door, covers that whole trap door, that kli cheres, by virtue of that halacha, that only the outside of a kli cheres becomes tamei, not the inside, will stop the tumah from the first floor where the dead body is from going up to the second floor, and will stop those things from becoming tamei. Fine. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, kli cheres matzil al kol. That's the halacha we just said. A kli cheres stops tumah from connecting to the top floor. It'll stop it from flowing upwards. Divrei Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says that works without exception. Beis Shammai says, Beis Shammai omrim, eino matzil el al ochlin v'al mashkim v'al kli cheres. Beis Shammai says, it's true that the kli cheres can plug the hole and will stop the tumah from going up to the second floor, but only with respect to ochlim, food, drink, and other earthenware vessels. But when it comes to anything else, such as people, such as vessels that are not kli cheres, when it comes to anything else, those will remain tamei. Amru em beis hillel beis shammai mipnei ma. Beis hillel says, why on earth would that be? There's no reason to distinguish between earthenware vessels and people and food and etc. There's no reason. What it should, in fact, says Beis Hillel, that earthenware vessel should plug up the hole, and the tumah from the mace should not go up for any purpose. So Amr Beis Shammai mipnei shehu tamei al gabe amei haaretz vein kli tamei chotzeitz. So Beis Shammai says that the reason why that earthenware vessel doesn't fully stop the tumah from going upwards is because we assume that the kli is tamei, because it's owned by an Am Haaretz, and he didn't properly immerse it, and a tamei kli will not stop tuma from going up. So Amru em Beis Hillel, v'alot yartem ochun umashkim shebetochos. Beis Hillel says, if you really believe that that kli is tamei, and it doesn't stop the tumah from going up, because that's the halacha, a tamei kli wouldn't stop the tumah from going up. But Beis Hillel says, if you really believe that it doesn't stop the tumah from going up, why are you distinguishing between food and earthenware vessels on the one hand, and not earthenware vessels and people on the other hand? It should not stop any tumah from going up. And everything on the second floor should be tamei. Why are you only saying that ochel amashkim and other kelim kli cheres should be tamei? So amru em beis shammai she tiharnu ochenu mashkin shebetocho leatzmo tiharnu aval niteres hakli she tiharto l'cha velo. So Beis Shammai answers with not quite a full answer, and he says, look, the Ochen U'Mashkin, we're not so worried about, because the Amaretz himself is going to eat the Ochen U'Mashkin. And so therefore, let's just say that that stuff is Tahor. But other stuff that's upstairs, that's on the second floor, that he might lend those vessels, right? Those non-earthenware vessels, he might lend them to you or me. And we don't want to make that Tahor. Meaning it's one thing to say that the food on the second floor is Tahor because the Am Haaretz himself is going to eat that. And we're not going to eat that food because we never trust food from an Am Haaretz, right? But the vessels he might lend out, and therefore we're going to be concerned about the Tumah and Tahara for that. And therefore, that's why Beis Shammai says we split our psak and only our Metaher Ochel on the second floor, but not vessels. Now that is a kind of cryptic answer because it begs the question of why did Beis Shammai not care about the food that the Am Haaretz himself is eating, and why did they bother to split this answer? Why didn't they just apply the halacha like Beis Hillel did wholesale and say, look, if it's a tamei vessel that's plugging up that hole, so then it's not going to stop the tumah from going up and everything upstairs is going to be tamei. And if it's a tar vessel that's blocking up the hole, so then it will stop the tumah, as Beis Hillel says, from going up and everything upstairs will be tahor. Why did they split the halacha? For that, we need the second brisa. Tanya, we have a brisa that says, Amar Rav Yehoshua, Boshnu mi divreichem Beis Shammai. He says, I don't understand. He kind of articulates the question we just asked. I don't understand what you, Beis Shammai, are holding. It doesn't make any sense. Efshar isha lasha bareva, is it possible to imagine, again, in this scenario we're talking about, that a woman's on the second floor. She is kneading dough in a trough, in a kind of kneading utensil. And isha vareva tamein, the woman herself, and the trough, which is not klicheres, is tamei, according to you, Beis Shammai. Tamein shiva is tamei shiva, has tumas mace, which means that it's going to require 7 days to purify. Ubatzek Torah, and the dough itself, which is Ochun Umashkin, is Tahor. Why should there be a difference? Lugin Malay Mashkin, if you have flasks filled with drinks. So Lugin Tamei Tumas Shiva, you're going to say that the vessels are Tamei Tumas mace, which require waiting 7 days. Umashkin Torah, and the food, the drink inside the flask is Tahor. That doesn't make any sense. Why would Beis Shammai split their psak and say that only Mashkin and Ochlin are Tamei, and only Klicheres are Tamei, whereas all other Kalim and people are Tahor? It doesn't make any sense. So Nitba lo Talmud Echa mitalmid Beis Shammai. So a Talmud of Beis Shammai came to Rav Yehoshua, had this question. Amr lo, Omer lo chataymen shu Beis Shammai. He said, and the Talmud said to him, do you want me to explain to you the reason for Beis Shammai? So Amr lo emor, he said, yeah, I absolutely want to hear the reason for Beis Shammai. So Amr lo, and so this Talmud of Beis Shammai explained to him the basis for Beis Shammai's psak. Amr lo, kli tamei chotzeitz, oino chotzeitz. So he said to him, in a rhetorical fashion, he said, look, does a kli tamei, do you agree that a kli tamei, if that kli that was positioned on that trap door, if it was a tamei kli, does it work to be make a chatzitza and to stop the tumor from going up? So Amr lo, eino chotzeitz. He said, I agree with you in theory. A kli tamei, if we knew that kli was tamei, then it would not stop the tumor from going up. Everything upstairs would be tamei. Then he said, kli sha'am aretz tamei otar. So he said, is a kli that's owned by an amaretz, is it presumed to be tamei or tahor? So Amr lo, tamei. So he said to him, I agree that if the kli is owned by an amaretz, it's presumptively tamei, because we assume that the amaretz didn't know what he was doing when he tivled it, or he wasn't careful about it, and therefore he says it is tamei, which would mean that everything upstairs should be tamei now, right? So v'im ata umer lo tamei. So the Talmud of Beis Shammai said, v'im ata umer lo tamei klum hashgiach alecha. If we tell this Am Haaretz that everything on that second floor is tamei, because we assume that all his kelim are tamei, would he listen to you? The stakes are too high. He would lose all his food. This guy thinks that he's leading a halachic lifestyle. He believes that the kelim in his house are tahor, And you're all of a sudden, you're the rabbi, you're going to come pay a house visit, and you're going to explain, oh, yeah, it's true that if that kli that was filling that trap door was a tahor kli, then all the stuff upstairs, with a dead body downstairs, all these stuff upstairs would be tahor, all your food that you're storing up there. But since you're not Mars, you don't really know what you're doing, we assume that the kli that's filling that trap door is really tameh, and therefore everything upstairs is tameh. Would he listen to you? You're going to make all his food tameh. He's not going to be able to eat anything. V'lo od, elashima ta'omer lo tameh. If you tell him all the food upstairs is tameh, omerucha, he would even yell at you and say, shali tar v'shalcha tameh. He's going to say rhetorically, he says, what are you talking about? All my stuff is Torah. You're the tameh guy. What are you, you're coming into my house and telling me that everything upstairs is tameh because you think that my kelim are tameh? It's not true. And he says, v'zehu ta'aman shabash v'shamay. So the Talmud of Beis Shammai explained that this is the basis for the ruling of Beis Shammai. In other words, the Amoraites is never going to accept our telling him that all his Kli Cheres and all his Ochen and Mashkim are Tamei, right? Because the Kli Cheres he's going to have to throw away. There's no way of making them Tahor. His Ochen and Mashkim he's going to have to throw away. There's no way of making them Tahor. So we're going to cut our losses and we're going to tell him that since he's the only one eating the ochlin, we're just going to tell him, okay, you know what, eat your ochlin, eat your food. You should assume that it's tahor. Look, you think that that vessel, that kli there was tahor, and therefore, in theory, it should stop the tummy from going upstairs. So go with that, Amaretz, and you could eat that food. And in fact, for the kli cheres also, we're going to say that that's tahor. And the other things we'll tell him are tamei, and then he'll kind of bring them to the mikvah and do the whole 7-day waiting things with those kelim. And then if he ever lends those things to us, we'll know that he did those things properly. That's the split decision. That's the basis for the split decision of Beis Shammai. I'm running out of time. Okay. Miyad hoch Rav Yehoshua, Rabbi Yehoshua accepted that answer. He liked it. He went to Beit Shammai's the kfarim of the Talmid of Beit Shammai. Omer nanesi lachem atzmos Beit Shammai. He says, you in your right, because the Talmud lived after the all the Talmidim of Shammai, the real Beit Shammai was alive. So he went to their kvaros and he said, I accept your answer. Umastumos shalachem kach mefurashos halachas kama v'kama. And if your halachos that are more difficult to understand are so logical and so understandable, so all the more so your halachos and your piskei halacha that are not so cryptic, they are also understandable and make perfect sense. Amru, and they said about this Rabbi Yehoshua, kol yamav hushchurushinav mipnei taniyosav, his teeth were black because he was always fasting because he wanted to be mechaper for the improper way that he had first addressed Beis Shammai with respect to the halacha, saying it doesn't make any sense, and he felt that he really was answered. But the point is as follows, Katani Mias l'cha velo. Both of these brises assume that Amei Haaretz lend their kelim to Talmidei Chachamim, and Talmidei Chachamim borrow those kelim from Amei Haaretz and rely on their tahar status. Alma shalina minaya. We see from all this that this does happen. People borrow. And so this ratifies or underscores our initial question. You're going to say that your takana only applies to kudshim, and it doesn't apply to truma because we're not worried about Talmidei Chachamim taking truma from Amei Haaretz. The Kohanim will know not to do so. But what about the fact that Talmidei Chachamim borrow kelim from Amei Haaretz? Aren't we worried about that? We should be concerned about their proper tevila of kelim, and the gezeira of one pot not being immersed within another pot that we articulated in our Mishnah should apply equally to truma and not only to kudshim for this very reason, because we're concerned that the Amoraites will lend his stuff to a Talmid Chacham. The answer is kishailina minayu matblinam lehu. The answer is, okay, it's true that we borrow vessels from an Amaretz, but there's a simple fix to this. Whenever we borrow kelim from an Amaretz, we immerse them. We immerse them. If that was the case, then Beis Hillel should have immediately answered to Beis Shammai, there's no need for this whole takana that you just articulated, because once the Amaretz, or once the Talmud Chacham gets a hold of the Kli, he will immerse it. Our answer is, Tamei Meis Bai Hazah Gimel V'Zayin. Umano Zimel Yumi Lo Moshli Inshi. So the answer is that you distinguish between Tumah of a Tamei Meis and Tumah of a Tara. In all the Beis Hillel Beis Shammai discussion we were just talking about, we were talking about a Tumah of a Meis. Tumah of a Meis, of an Aviavos HaTumah, that's going to require the whole 7-day long process, right? And people don't typically borrow kalim for more than 7 days. You borrow a kli from your neighbor when you need it just to boil a pot, to boil some boiled eggs or something. You don't borrow a kli for more than 7 days. And so it wouldn't make sense for you to... and so therefore, when it comes to tumah and tara of a tamei meis, the ones we were talking about in the machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel just above, so there we're gonna want that we're gonna want that Amaretz to immerse the kelim himself so that they're available for the Talmud Chacham to use right away. But when it comes to the tumah and tara of truma, so that requires just tefillah alone. And so therefore, when a Talmud Chacham borrows a kli from an Amaretz for purposes of Truma, he's just going to be able to immerse it himself. He doesn't have to worry. He doesn't have to rely on the reliability of the Amaretz in doing so. Gemara then says, is it true that with respect to the Truma aspect, right, for the purposes of Truma, that we're not going to rely on the Amaretz's Tvila himself? Vatanya, Ne'emanim ame'aretz altaras tefilas tamei meis. Don't we have a braisa that says that in fact ame'aretz are reliable for tumah and tara for a tamei meis? Amar elbaye lo kasha lo habegufo habekelav. When that braisa said that ame'aretz are reliable with respect to tumah and tara for a tamei meis, that's talking about for his own body, but not for his vessels. Rava Amar Idi V'Idi B'Kelav. Rava says, no, both cases are with his vessels, not the distinction. V'Lakashi Hada Amar Me'olam Lo Hitbalti Kli B'Toch Kli V'Hada Amar Hitbalti Aval Lo Hitbalti B'Kli She'en B'Fib Shreferes Hanod. So Rava says, no, the distinction is the braisa that we just quoted a moment ago that says that Ame Aretz are Ne'manim, that's when they say that I immersed my Kli... That's when they say that I never immersed one kli within another. But once they already say I immersed it within another, but I was careful to distinguish between a kli that had a wide enough opening of a shofar sanod versus a kli that wasn't a wide enough opening of a shofar sanod, that's when we start questioning the ne'emanus and the carefulness of the ama'aretz, and that's where we're going to say not. And this distinction is appears elsewhere as well. Vatanya, we see elsewhere. Ne'manim for inabraisa. Ne'man amaretz lomar peros lochshiru. Aval inod ne'man lomar peros lochshiru aval lonitmo. We believe amaretz to say that these fruits are tahor because they never even became wet. They never even became able to be susceptible of tuma. But once the amaretz gets into the weeds and says no, these peros did become capable of becoming tame, they became wet, but I was careful and I made sure that they weren't tame. Once he already gets into the weeds with that, then we don't believe him. We only believe him on kind of gross blanket statements that everything's okay. But once he starts making distinctions and we have to rely on his carefulness on halachic details, that's where we're not going to believe him. And so the same thing is true, says Rava, above. We believe the Talmud, we believe the Amaretz to say that I never immersed one kli within another. We don't believe him to say I immersed the kli within another, but the kli that I immersed it with it with that I immersed within it had a wide enough opening of a shvafer sanod. Then there were questions, the statement we just said a few lines above, which is that with respect to his guf, himself, his own personal tahara, we believe him. Bagufo mi mehemen, do we believe him with respect to his own personal tahara? Vatanya, don't we have a verse that says, chaver shabala hazos mazen alav miad? If a chaver, if a talmid chacham shows up to receive the hazah, the sprinkling of paraduma, which required waiting 3 days and then 7 days, right? So if he shows up and he says, I did the proper waiting, we'll do the hazah without asking any questions. However, Ama Aretz Shabala Hazos Ein Mazin Alav Hachiyaseh B'faneinu Shlosha V'Shiva. When it comes down to Ama Aretz, we don't just take him at his word. We actually make him wait there for 7 days, for 3 days and 7 days, and do the hazahs after we've personally overseen his waiting. So the question was, above we said that we believe the Amarites with respect to Tumah of his own guf, and here we're saying we watch over him carefully. Abai says that because we were so careful and discerning and only doing the hazah once we've personally confirmed that he waited 3 days, 7 days, so he's now all jarred by that experience and realizes that he has to take this seriously, and because we're machmir on him on that beginning stuff, so we're going to be makil more and assume that he was careful with respect to his own personal status. Now the Gemara is going to quote the next takana in the Mishnah, which had to do with inside and outside of the, it says achorim v'toch. My achorim v'toch, what is this halacha altogether? So the Gemara quotes a Mishnah, kidetan, klisha nitma achorav b'mashkin, achorav t'meyen, tocho ugno ozno v'yadav tohorin. So the halacha is, with respect to many kelim, that, at least with klicheres, right? And this is true by truma now, because this is the distinction we're making. When it comes to truma, if you are metame a kli on the outside, its outside is tame, but the inside of the kli and its lip and its the holding thing, that's all tahor. We distinguish between parts of a kli. Nitma tocho kulo tame. However, if the inside becomes tame, so then the whole outside becomes tahor. So this is the distinction that the Mishnah is saying. When it comes to truma, if you are metame the outside of a kli, the whole inside and the lip and the handle remain tahor, as opposed to when it comes to kodesh, once any part of the kli becomes tame, the whole thing becomes tame. That's the thing we're talking about. Then the Mishnah had said, among those things, the inside and the lip and the handle, beis hatzvita. So the Gemara says, my beis hatzvita, what was this beis hatzvita that remains tahor when it comes to truma? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, makom shetsofto. This is the place that you hold it, the handle. V'chein hu omer v'yitzavik l'kli, quotes a pasuk to say that. Rav Ashzi, Amar Rav Yochanan, makom shenaki adas tzovin. He says this is the place where people who are very picky and don't want parts of their food to get mixed together, so they have like a little holding thing on the side of their plate, like a little compartment where they put their ketchup. That's the part that we're talking about. Tani Rav Bibi, kamed Rav Nachman, kol kelim, inlehem achorim v'toch. So he says, all kelim, we don't distinguish between the inside and the outside. Echad kodshe hamikdash v'echad kodshe agvul. That's true with respect to kodshim. This is consistent with what we said in our Mishnah, that when it comes to kodshim, when you're metami the outside, automatically the whole kli becomes tami. We don't distinguish between outside and inside. That's true with kodshim, kodshe hamikdash, and it's also true with kodshe agvul. Amar lei kodshe agvul maininu. What are we talking about? What are kodshe agvul? Kodshe agvul sounds like kodshim that are outside of the Beis HaMikdash, outside in the gvul and outside in the countryside. That sounds like truma. That goes against our Mishnah, because we said when it comes to truma, it's not true that the whole inside and outside and handle and lip is all the same. When it comes to truma, if you're metame the outside, it doesn't automatically be metame the inside and the lip and the handle. So he says, okay, maybe Dilma Luchulin Shnasu Ataras HaKodesh Kamras. Maybe when you said Kachay Agvul, it wasn't talking about Truma, which is consistent with our Mishnah. That's good for our Mishnah. We could save our Mishnah. It's not a contradiction. Rather, it's talking about Chulin Shnasu Ataras HaKodesh, people who accepted upon themselves David, you just shared your screen. People accepted upon themselves the stringencies of Tumah and Tahara with respect to Chulin. Maybe that's what it's saying. For that purpose, for those purposes, we're saying that we don't distinguish between inside and outside. And if so, Ad Kar Milsa Domer Rabba Bar Avua, that's consistent with Rabba Bar Avua. Achas Asar Ma'alos Shano Kan Sheish Rishonos Bein Lekodesh Bein Chulin Shnasa Al Taras Lekodesh Achronos Lekodesh Av Al Chulin Shnasa Al Taras Lekodesh, that at least with respect to the first half of the Mishnah, the Takanos and Gezeros that we're saying apply to Kudshim also apply to Chulin Shnasa Al Taras Lekodesh. People who accepted the stringencies of Kudshim with respect to their Chulin, those stringencies in our Mishnah will apply the first five or the first six. And this is consistent with that. This stringency, this second stringency, to say that if you're mitami the outside, it's also mitair the inside and the lip and the handle, that applies not only to kudshim, but also to truma shenase al taros hakodesh. Okay, that was a mouthful of information. I hope you got it. It's worth looking at it again if you really want to get this stuff down. It's a lot of stuff, a little complicated. I hope everyone's doing well, and... And,